Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Sports betting is illegal in most of the country, but the practice is common nonetheless. Supreme Court this week decided to change the rules of that game, leaving it to the states to decide the issue. The court ruled in favor of New Jersey in a case known as Chris Christie versus the NCAA, striking down a 25-year-old federal law that largely outlawed sports betting outside of Nevada. New Jersey and Delaware will soon open betting windows in those states. Much of the rest of the country is expected to follow. Columbus Dispatch sports columnist Rob Aller has followed the issue. He joins us now. Welcome back.
And always a pleasure to be here.
So why is this such a big deal?
I think it's a quantitative issue more than qualitative. As you said, a lot of people gamble. But this is going to remove the illegal aspect of it. And like anything else, if you remove the speed limit, and there was no speed limit, people drive 80, 90 or whatever. So I think more people will gamble. It'll just be a numbers thing. I think some people are worried this is going to become the Wild West. My analogy is it's a little more pioneering, moving west slowly. This is going to grow and grow and grow if it's legalized to where we don't know what the cultural impact will be. I think that's what intrigues me. How is this going to change fandom out there? And is it?
Sports betting hasn't always been illegal. There was a day and there were problems.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the addiction side of it. Mm-hmm. I think Boston College had a point shaving deal back in the day. NYU had the same thing.
Of course, the Red Sox.
The White Sox. There's always been these pockets of things that have happened. Now, I made the point in a column that if you're a college athlete, and they're already making millions and billions off you with TV rights and that type of thing. And now even more billions are going to be made off you in a sense through legalized gambling. Mm-hmm. Are you going to want your fair share? I mean, how does that work? Is there going to be more unionizing? Are guys going to feel like they're owed a piece of the pie? Well, I think human nature comes into play on some of this stuff. I know that it's been connected to the marijuana issue. If you legalize something, it becomes, you know, the black market goes away. Mm-hmm. The difference is, you know, we're talking people, not a plant. People have consciences and they can be controlled. And so the athlete themselves, and maybe even the coach, Pete Rose, right, can be influenced where there's money and more money. There's going to be corruption. It's just the way it is. Now, that said, I think this new law is just – it's candy for gamblers. It's going to be fantastic for gamblers. You're going to see more addiction. You're going to see more of the – there are going to be more negatives. But for the casual person, it's going to become ease of access. You just go online. Right now, 90%, 97% or something of sports gambling is illegally done offline, right, or offshore gambling. So okay. You got to go to Vegas.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the prospects of legalized gambling on sports in Ohio and across the country now that the United States Supreme Court has ruled that betting on sports is legal, but it's up to the states to make the decision about how and where and when and so forth. My guest is Rob Aller. He's a Columbus Dispatch sports columnist. He wrote about that this week. We'll post a link to his column on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Meanwhile, listeners, what do you think about sports gambling? Do you think it should be legalized? Do you want it to be legalized in Ohio? Or are you satisfied with just going online? Because that's something they're not going to be able to stop anywhere. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ohio can't stop people from betting online. That's not the state's purview, is it?
No. But again, we're talking numbers. Here's a statistic I found to be astonishing. I think there's expected to be 4.9 billion bet on the Super Bowl, the next Super Bowl. 4.9 billion.
Because of this?
No.
But
4.7 of that is illegal. That's 4.9 billion on one game of one sport, you know, across the nation. So you're talking some huge numbers. Once they legalize this, mm-hmm, that thing's going to escalate beyond what anybody can believe.
Because people, just for fun, it's not going to be a big deal, and
right,
there won't be any
less hassle. you might be able to go into your Kroger and there's a kiosk, you can bet. And I also find it fascinating. I think this is not just going to be sports fans. This is going to suddenly be just gamblers who find sports as another avenue to, you know, to get some
express
action on
themselves.
That.
Yeah, as gamblers.
Exactly.
There's the other side of it, though, the corruption side, when it comes to the sports participants, you know, the people in the game, the coaches, the managers, the refs, the umpires, that whole thing, and the players, of course.
Yeah, as you said earlier, it's always been an issue on a small scale, and I don't think we know the answer here. I don't know, you know, what legalizing will do to those participants, other than, as I said earlier, the college athlete or the athlete who, you know, feels they are owed something may just feel, well, it's legal, so maybe me taking, maybe me throwing a game or fixing a game isn't as bad as it was when sports gambling was illegal. I mean, you know, the how you convince yourself and the rationale in an athlete's mind is pretty fascinating. I don't know if that'll happen more or not. I think, again, it's a little bit of a great unknown here, other than there's going to be a lot more of it and a lot more money.
Have you heard from Ohio State about this yet?
They did not get back to me.
I
think they're probably waiting. I don't think they would be thrilled, although it does – everybody – has a piece of the pie here. I mean, Ohio State could, I don't know how it works with the state, but could they have a betting window?
Could they generate revenue, in other words?
And
they've never been shy of that, right?
We know that. Absolutely.
Well, we already know that when OSU plays Michigan or any other team in a typical OSU season, there are people sitting in some pretty comfy chairs in a big room in a Vegas casino.
Yes. Now, it's interesting that sports betting, you have to go to Vegas.
Right.
It's pretty small piece of that pie.
But it
could increase.
I was surprised when I was there 20 years ago how big of a room I think I was at the Mirage. And, you know, I just kind of poked my head in there. And it was this huge room with a million screens. Of course, it looks like a typical bar nowadays. But back then, it was a big deal. And, you know, people sitting in their nice chairs and just watching the games, a million games going on at the same time, horse races. You name it.
Yeah. Well, again, it's going to take off. I think I saw a statistic where it's all things considered in the big picture, there's still much more money that goes towards slots, toward, you know, blackjack at the casinos, at least in Vegas, and sports betting. But again, this takes the handcuffs off, so to speak. So go for it.
How do you what kind of pressure is going to be brought to bear in Ohio, do you think?
So. Well, I think here's the deal on that. West Virginia has already approved this. They're already set to go with this.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay.
Michigan's already set to go with it. Pennsylvania is ready to go. Indiana is not. So I think there's going to be pressure on. In fact, Mike DeWine, I think, came out the first day and said, we're not really sure about this.
His spokesman said he opposed the expansion.
He opposed it, and then
Now
he's open to it.
Yeah.
I think you start looking at the numbers and what could be lost for Ohio when people are going next door. You know, it's like the lottery, right? If there's no lottery in Ohio, people are driving to Pennsylvania. They're going to West Virginia, Kentucky, whatever it may be. So Ohio is surrounded a little bit, other than Indiana, with probably illegalized gambling coming sooner than later.
Richard Cordray, the Democratic nominee for governor, came right out of the box and said he was for it. And he said it could fund so many things that we don't have enough money for now.
Yeah, I think there's tax. It's just like the lottery. I think they at least are going to sell it as going towards schools and helping out that way. I think the taxes, read a story just this morning that the taxes are not quite what you think. I mean, it's not like it's going to be this. We're going to build every
city. Well, they never have
been.
Right.
So a little bit helps, I guess.
What's the reception been like among the sports leagues? I know NBA has been for it for longer than not.
NBA is for it.
Yep.
NFL, they all want it to be federal because, you know, that's the
uniform.
Big thing. Yeah, then it's uniform. I'm not sure it goes that route anyhow. But, you know, I found an interesting take is that golf, of all things, really is in favor of this because it's just going to bring more attention and more eyeballs.
And they need the attention.
Yeah,
they need
the attention, and you can bet on anything in golf. You know, how many steps does it take from the first tee to the green?
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, that's what I think kind of intriguing about the whole gambling thing anyways is all the different stuff they gamble on. It's not just the outcome of a game.
Oh, yeah. And to me, I wrote the other day, the societal kind of cultural effect here is what interests me. Let's say you're a fan of the Cleveland Browns. I know that may be hard for some to believe for the way the Brownies have been doing.
But either you're a fan or you're not. Fair weather.
Let's say you're a fan and your heart says pick the Browns, but your pocketbook, your wallet says don't. So when the game is on the line and you need a touchdown or a touchdown hurts you and you could lose $1,000 by a field goal, how does that affect the way you root? And we're already seeing this a little bit in the fantasy leagues where people are trying to compartmentalize their fandom, their heart. You know, this is the team I grew up rooting for with an individual on the opposite team mm-hmm. who might hurt your team but helps you because you have them on your fantasy league. So right now they're able to separate it. I want Joe Smith have a big game, but there's his team lose to my team that I've rooted for. Mm-hmm. It gets a little messy. It's only going to get messier.
I thought of Art Schleister and Pete Rose, you know, when this came through. Two people who, you know, I'm not sure if Rose was an addict or not. Art Schleser certainly is a gambling addict, but well known. Of course, the OSU quarterback of renown who has done several nosedives now and is now serving time again. You know, what he was doing was illegal. It wouldn't be anymore.
Well, I think he's also in prison for fraud. So I think that's going to be illegal.
Be illegal.
And some of this stuff, you're not going to be, as an athlete, you're not going to be able to be involved in this.
It's still going to ban.
They have their rules and they have their policies.
In the leagues,
and their
right. laws.
Exactly. So, but how does that get changed? Time will tell.
Do you think it could change the nature of the situation for Pete Rose? You know, it back, though, they do, you know.
No, I don't think so, because it was against baseball rules.
At the time.
I mean, it was, yeah.
It
all baseball
be.
Players and managers and anyone involved in baseball knows no gambling, life suspension.
Are the NFL, the NHL, mm-hmm. and NCAA, they've been opposed to it. But they would prefer it at a federal level, as you said.
Yeah, I think the pro leagues are for it because it just means more viewers. More people are going to be watching. The college, NCAA, has been against it.
The integrity of the sport?
Yes, integrity of the sport.
I thought the NFL felt that way.
They're kind of mixed, but I think where there's a dollar sign, they're going to be all for that. You know, the other side, Ann, that people may be curious about is the inside information. I'm a sports columnist, so if I write something that
you know how somebody's what their injury might be, but you're not reporting it because
you
know it off the record,
or you ask the athlete, you know, how are you feeling today, and the athlete says, "Oh, this is not a good day. My ankle hurts." Well, what does that mean? I mean, the sports information people have got their hands full on this one, because how do you stop them from answering questions? It gets into some First Amendment stuff here, really.
Well, the NHL now, I mean, anyone who follows hockey knows they say upper body injury, lower body injury. That's about all you ever hear.
Right. Well, that's probably going to change.
Why would that change?
Well, because
disclosure?
The pressure, yeah. There's so much money out there that I don't think people will stand for. The league itself will not stand for, you know, people not knowing what that means. There's going to be information overload, just like there is with everything. Look at Vegas. They know everything.
We are talking about the U.S. Supreme Court decision this week to legalize, or at least legalize betting on sports nationwide, but they're leaving it to the states to decide. As we said, some of the sports leagues would rather have it be done at the federal level, so there's uniformity across the board. My guest is Rob Oller. He's a Columbus Dispatch sports columnist. We're talking about, you know, Ohio is obviously a very big sports state, very populous state with a lot of gamblers in it, but most of the gambling that's done online is done offshore, with offshore sites. It is illegal everywhere except, it has been illegal everywhere except in Nevada. New Jersey is getting ready to
Delaware,
open up. Delaware.
Delaware, mm-hmm. Montana, maybe.
Okay.
There's a few,
you said,
states.
West Virginia's poised.
Right.
They've already passed the law. It would have to pass a law either in the Ohio General Assembly or on a referendum, in a referendum type vote. What do you think, listeners? Would you like to see sports betting in Ohio legalized? 614-292-8513 or email us at all allsides at WOSU.org. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. We're talking about sports gambling in the U.S. in light of the Monday decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that gave states the freedom to decide the issue of sports betting on their own. Still with us is Columbus Dispatch sports columnist Rob Aller. Joining us by phone, ESPN journalist covering the gambling industry, David Purdom. Welcome back, David.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Also joining us is the National Director of Stop Predatory Gambling, Les Bernal. Welcome, Les.
Thank you. Good morning,
Les. Is it obvious to everybody what the dangers of expanding legalized gambling is?
Yeah, we don't need to speculate what government sanctioned sports betting is going to look like. You look at Ohio. You got casinos now all over the state. You got an incredibly aggressive lottery. You know, when you think about when Senator Elizabeth Warren stands up and says, you know, our system is rigged against everyday people, government-sanctioned gambling is Exhibit A, and sports betting is going to make that problem worse because it's only going to worsen opportunity for millions of citizens, especially, you know, for thousands of people in Ohio.
But bringing it into the light, right now it's either offshore or it's organized crime doing the managing the bets. Legalizing it, doesn't that bring it out into the light a little more to control it better?
Your listeners are wise enough. When you live in Ohio, look how Ohio regulates gambling now. When the state of Ohio regulates gambling, its sole objective is to maximize profits. It's not to protect the public good. So the idea that somehow illegal gambling goes down by bringing in sports gambling, we've seen in Australia, the illegal gambling market's still booming. I mean, it makes sports gambling more acceptable to people. So, you know, if I'm going to go through the state, like, I have to pay taxes. I got to give my social security number if I'm going to place wagers. Mm. I'm still incentivized to go online because I don't have to do any of that. And the odds maker online is going to give me better, better odds because he's not paying the same prices. He doesn't have to pay tax to the state and so on. So the whole thing is a scheme. This isn't being done to benefit the people of Ohio or any of the Americans. It's being done to benefit a privileged few who run the games and a few sports media companies who stand to benefit from more advertising.
David Purdom, do you think it's poppycock that organized crime will go away?
Oh, definitely. There will always be an underground market in this. However, that underground market does not offer the types of consumer protections and problem gambling services that the regular market will require to be. And I do think that the general public, maybe the less savvy sports bettors, will gravitate towards the local market. They're not going to be worried about shopping for odds at the best price. They see the legal market as a legitimate place to go compared to where they would be nervous to place a bet with an offshore bookmaker or a local bookmaker. So there's pros and cons, as Les has mentioned. So we'll just kind of have to, I'm sure there's going to be mistakes made as we put this thing in process in place. But we're just going to have to learn from those mistakes and try to do the best we can.
David, 25 years ago, Congress barred sports gambling in every state but Nevada. What's changed over that time?
The acceptance of sports betting, again, Les mentioned that as well. There was a poll from the Washington Post about 6 or 7 months ago that showed about 55% of Americans now support legalized sports betting and think that is the better way. The second thing is the sports leagues. They have pivoted on the issue, most led by Adam Silver of the NBA. He now believes that regulated sports betting is the better way to protect the integrity of sports than the offshore and local bookmakers in the current unregulated environment. So those are the two factors I think are the most that has led to this change. One, just the overall acceptance in society and the pivot of the sports leagues.
And the money that could be generated because most states have legalized gambling slots and casino gambling now. They've kind of gotten a taste of that, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's no doubt everybody will be looking to make money as they do in any sort of industry.
Rob Aller, do you have a sense about, I know you don't cover the General Assembly, you cover sports, mm-hmm. but do you have a sense about whether this will be done at the referendum level, you know, by voters directly or in the legislature?
I think it'll be legislature.
So they're going to just buck up and do it.
Yeah, I think they'll read the tea leaves and see that, what'd you say, 55% that the majority, so they'll just go move forward. That would be my take. Now, there will be groups that kind of rise up that try to fight it, I'm sure. And so it's who has the power here or more power.
Les Brunel, what do we know? What does history teach us about the incidence of addiction, gambling addiction, when it's legalized versus illegal?
Yeah, you know, there's no, as we talked about earlier, the objective of when state governments get into the gambling business, the objective has always been to maximize profits. And in the gambling business, in the commercialized gambling business, the profits come from the out-of-control addicted player. Your casinos in Ohio right now, study after study shows that more than half the profits from slot machines come from people who are problem gamblers. Your state lottery, the New York Times has reported, this is true for lotteries across the country, that between 70% to 80% of lottery revenue comes from 10% of the people that play the lottery. And you put that in context is two-thirds of the public hardly gambles at all. You know, but bigger than the addiction piece, Ann, is, you know, our country now, we have one out of two citizens who don't own any assets whatsoever. And that's true for Ohio. It's from Reuters News Service, did this big analysis of inequality in our country. One out of two folks don't own any assets, no stocks, no bonds, no property. Yet, and the people of Ohio over the last 5 years, according to the Columbus Dispatch, lost more than $10 billion to government-sanctioned gambling schemes already. So when we talk, when the American left stands up and talks about, you know, trying to provide opportunity for people, one of the biggest shames of the American left over the last 25 years has been its complicity with the injustice of government-sanctioned gambling. And sports betting is going to make that even worse if Ohio brings it in.
Why do you politicize it in that way, the American left? I mean, in Ohio, it looks like both candidates for governor, a conservative Republican on the right and a moderate Democrat on the other side, both support this to one degree or another.
Because I come from the left. I come from the state of Massachusetts, where we have, you know, people stand up and say, oh, we care about working people. You know, the left is supposed to stand up for ordinary Americans. This is the most, when we talked about how our system is rigged against everyday people, this is exhibit A. This is how, you know, gambling, somehow a business that milks existing wealth, a business that transfers wealth from thousands of people into the hands of a privileged few, somehow that's a business that's going to rescue our cities in Ohio, how it's going to improve opportunity for people. It's a lie, and it's been the Democrats that have driven this. Ted Strickland was governor in Ohio, kind of led the way, kind of gave a green lighted casinos to come in into the state, despite the fact that the people of Ohio voted four times against it. This isn't being done to benefit ordinary citizens. This is the ultimate example how, you know, we talk about, the left talks about the 1%. This is the 1% that's benefiting from this. And I think someone who comes from the left, I think it's time we awaken our conscience about this incredible injustice and the complicity we've had and how it contributes to the inequality in our country.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the prospect of legalized gambling on sports in Ohio and across the country now that the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that it should be legal if the states approve it. A lot of the sports leagues want the federal government to manage this for uniformity across the board. You just heard from Les Brunel, National Director of Stop Predatory Gambling. Also with us, David Purdom, journalist for ESPN. He covers the gambling industry. And Rob Aller, Columbus Dispatch sports columnist. David Purdom, any sense about how this would be structured if it was done at a federal level?
You know, the NFL has been in contact. NBA is heading with Congress right now. Senator Orrin Hatch seems to be one of the leaders of this. I would think the federal framework, they are going to acknowledge that the states will be the biggest part of the regulatory framework. However, I think they will try to put some sort of benefits in for the sports leagues, whether that is a integrity fee has been tossed around as well, or simply data rights. A lot of people think the rights of the data, which the NFL currently does not have any intellectual property rights on, but if they are able to legislate some sort of intellectual property rights on the data.
You mean keeping track of how many times at bat, how many RBIs, right. That kind of stuff?
You know, it's more of the subjective things that they're looking at. And for example, an assist in basketball or hockey, or maybe an error in baseball. Those little things that have a little bit of subjectiveness to it, they want to have consistent ruling and an official ruling on that. They want the sports books to use that data to make sure everything is consistent. And of course, if they use that data, they're going to want to charge the sports books for those data. So they're looking at figuring out how to monetize it. I think they think they'll have more success at the federal level.
Rob Aller, do you think this could lead to more disputes of plays? I know in hockey, there's a lot more disputes in plays these days already.
Things always get more complicated, right?
Uh-huh.
I think, yeah. I mean, is it a Pandora's box? I don't know. But it's going to be more complicated by doing this.
And David Purdom, do you agree with Les Brunel that it's a left-right kind of an issue?
Well, the right is in charge of the Supreme Court right now, and the Supreme Court ruled that. But I don't, you know, the right has always been against gambling, but four states' rights, so it's a little bit different there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think that it is completely political at this point.
Tommy in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Tommy.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My comment or a question is, every time we've tried to stay away from legalizing things in Ohio, especially like gambling, all the other states go in front of us, or a lot of them, like West Virginia and Indiana, and we're behind the eight ball. It's like it's going to happen. Why would we want to delay it and be behind everybody and get in front of it this time, especially since it's been approved by the Supreme Court?
Well, how do you feel about restrictions or money set aside for gambling addiction issues, that kind of a thing?
That's already, I think, part of the equation. So if they happen in Indiana, that'll be part of the equation anyway, I would think.
Les Brunel?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, they should. I mean, they should have things for that addiction. But it's going to happen, whether it happens here or some other state. They can't stop it. So why don't we get in front of it in Ohio instead of behind it like we've done in the past?
Thanks a lot, Tommy. I appreciate that time. Appreciate your time. Les Brunel, is there an amount of money that the industry could throw at addiction that would satisfy you on that score?
If the gambling interests and state governments were serious about addressing the major public health consequences of them promoting predatory gambling in Ohio and across the country, they put the kind of money it takes to address those problems, the entire scheme would lose money. Like the entire business model is based on the out-of-control, addicted player. The casual player is irrelevant to the gambling business model, okay? And that's true for lotteries, it's true for your regional casinos in your state, and it's true for sports betting. So the idea that somehow, you know, when you have a higher problem gambling council and these other problem gambling councils, when they invest money in this, it's done for appearance's sake, just to give the appearance that the gambling interests care about the folks where they make most of their money from. If you meaningfully help these citizens who become addicted to this courtesy of the state government program, then at the end of the day, there's no purpose for this program to exist because it would lose more money in the long term. It's the whole thing benefits the privileged few at the expense of everybody else.
Yeah, Rob Aller?
I'm not going to say I disagree with that, but what makes this different in a gambling sense is, you know, when it's blackjack and it's the lottery, it's not on national television where, you know, billions of people are watching. I mean, I look at these fantasy leagues, and this is just an extension of that. A lot of people, not just the 1%, play fantasy leagues. Now you're going to move this onto TV where you can watch your fantasy league, in a sense, play out, and you can bet right there. I think there is a distinction between regular casino slot machine gambling, where it is an addictive behavior, and I'm not saying it won't be addictive with sports. It's just I think the access is going to be so easy because of mass media that it will draw in more than just the fringe 1%, and that's a danger in its own right, I guess.
And if I may, just when we talk about the forms of sports gambling that are coming down the pike here, it's not your traditional sports bet where I'm going to take, you know, the Cavaliers 3.5 over the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be, is the next shot in this game between the Celtics and the Cavaliers, is it going to be a 3-point shot or a layup? You know, so it's called in-play betting. It's like a slot machine experience.
Real time.
Real time. playing every 5 seconds you can place a bet. So it's the equivalent of playing an electronic gambling machine.
Right.
And that's what the guys promoting this don't tell you what it's about. It's that this benefits a privileged few who run the games at the expense of ordinary Americans, whether you gamble or not.
David Purdom, I know you're not a spokesperson for ESPN, so I'm not directing it to you for that purpose. But I had imagined that the broadcasters, the cable television companies, are thrilled.
Yeah, I think they obviously have a position to make some extra money on sponsorships, and some will go into affiliate deals where you'll have advertisements on a website, and you can click on that advertisement to bet at a certain sports book, and you will get an affiliate fee for that. So there are definite ways that this can be monetized. For example, in the UK, ESPN's UK website has a bet now button on in there. So if you're reading a story and you see that and you say, hey, I'd like to bet on this game, you can hit that button and it'll take you to an affiliate sports book that they have some sort of partnership with. And allow it. Of course, gambling is legal in the UK and has been for a long time. So I absolutely agree that, you know, the media industry is in a place to benefit from this.
David Purdom, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ann.
David Purdom is a journalist for ESPN. He covers the gambling industry. Also, Les Bernal, National Director of Stop Predatory Gambling. Thanks to you as well. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
We'll continue our conversation with Rob Oller and others on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the Supreme Court's landmark decision on Monday that gave states the freedom to decide on the issue of sports betting. Still with us is Columbus Dispatch sports columnist Rob Oller. Joining us now by phone is certified compulsive gambling counselor and co-author of the 2014 book, All Bets Are Off, Losers, Liars, and Recovering from Gambling Addiction, Arnie Wexler. Welcome to the show, Arnie.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you, and thanks for letting me come on and talk about this.
You have obvious concerns that gambling addiction cases will rise. How is addiction to gambling, what did we compare it to? Is it comparable to opiates?
Well, there's similarities and differences between gambling addiction and drugs and alcohol, but it's basically in the same thing. If you look at the DSM, which is the American Psychiatric Association book, mm-hmm. it's right in the they're all three together, drugs, alcohol, and gambling. The yeah. only difference is the gambler doesn't put anything in their body. There's no track marks. There's no dilated pupils. It's hidden and invisible, and that's the real problem.
How do we know about it? Because of brain scans now, right?
Correct.
What do those show us?
They're showing us that there's some kind of deficiency and gene problem with people who have a compulsive gambling addiction. And they're proving it by, right now, the Parkinson's meds and restless leg syndrome medicines are creating people that become compulsive gamblers in one-third of all the cases for the people that take that medicine. So we know it's hitting some part of the brain that the gambling addiction is hitting.
And you hear this news and you think what?
Well, here's the proof of the pudding. When I ran the Council on Compulsive Gambling in New Jersey, we paid Gallup to do a survey. And two of the questions we asked are very prominent to this. We asked how many people bought illegal lottery tickets, and the number was 31%. How many people buy legal lottery tickets? 81%. You got a batch of people in this country, a percentage of people in this country, that would never ever gamble with a bookmaker or do anything illegal. Now we make it available and legal. You're going to get some of those people going to already try it and gamble, and the outcome will be that some of those people are going to get addicted. When the casinos opened in Atlantic City in 1978, mm-hmm. in 1977, there were 14 meetings of Gamblers Anonymous in New Jersey. 2.5 years later, there were 47.
Have you noticed that around the country as gambling has been legalized, you know, casino slot machine gambling has been legalized across the country?
Absolutely. You can look at your state in Ohio and see what happened. After the casinos came in, it takes about 2 years, and the meetings are opening like crazy in Ohio.
Is the treatment for gambling addiction similar to the treatments for drug and alcohol addiction?
Yes and no. Here's the real problem. The insurance companies are not covering, for the most part, compulsive gambling. And when the compulsive gambler hits bottom and and they're looking for treatment and help, they don't have the money because they've tapped out all their money and they owe everybody they ever came in contact with by that time. Mm. So there is no money for people to come to treatment. How they get in is if they have an alcohol or drug problem, they're able to be taken into treatment centers.
Listeners, what do you think? 614-292-8513. The U.S. Supreme Court has said that gambling could be legal across the country if the states approve it. Some of the leagues would prefer that they do it at the federal level for uniformity. What do you think? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Rob Aller, what have you heard from your readers since your column came out on Tuesday?
Well, I think it runs a gamut. I mean, that the people who already gamble, this is much ado about nothing. This is great. The sky is not falling. Other people are worried about the addiction issue for mm-hmm. sure. But I think there's a lot of old school people who do not gamble, or maybe they do, who are again concerned about what this does in terms of, let's say, you attend an Ohio State game, and again the integrity of the sport, maybe not even illegal, not so much from the athletes doing anything wrong, but again from the fan side of it, you know, how does it affect your cheering, your allegiance? You're suddenly, if you have $10,000 on a score, you're looking out for number one more than whether you want the Buckeyes to win, lose, or whatever it may be. So, you know, that is a longer term, maybe not as, front and center an issue. But I think it gets to the core, if not the integrity, of what a fan is or what we've always thought a fan to be. I mean, this could be a sea change in how games are looked at and how they're thought about. You know, if everyone is doing it, this may still be a small percentage of people betting. So mm-hmm. we'll see.
Christine in Lancaster, you're on the air. Hi, Christine.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
My concern is with how Ohio implements things like this. Mm-hmm. For example, when the casinos were brought in, when medical marijuana was passed, what the legislature tends to do, it seems to me, is they restrict who can provide the service. They go out of their way to isolate and create sort of special designated providers. And I think that leads to a lot of problems for the communities that make accommodations on the promise it's going to benefit them. I don't understand why Ohio isn't more open in the process of licensing rather than strictly identifying certain groups.
I think that's an interesting observation. I think you're right. I mean, the Ohio General Assembly, they're into control. They like to control stuff. There's no question about that. I don't know if anybody can speak to the impact of that kind of control on the system. I mean, does it help Arnie Wexler from where you sit when a state is more controlling in that way?
Well, the states are only interested in putting money in their pocket, and that's what it's all about. You know, a perfect example is New York State barred fantasy gambling when it first came out. And all of a sudden, in the last couple of years. They made a deal with the fantasy gambling people. They're getting 14.5%, and now it's legal in New York. And that's what it's all about. Ohio got it because they're taking a cut of the gamblers' money.
Christine, thanks a lot for that call. So those kind of restrictions in the long run don't really help with the spread of the disease of addiction.
Well, if you're addicted, I mean, I would bet cockroach races. I mean, I'm in recovery now since April 10th, 1968. That's over 50 years at this point. I could tell you when I was in the throes of my gambling, I was a plant manager supervising 400 people. I was stealing from the company every day. I was doing all kinds of illegal stuff. I was sending customers to my bookmaker so I can get a piece of their action. And anybody that came in and sold me anything, whether it's boxes, it was a big dress company. Mm-hmm. Boxes, hangers, the trucking, I had to get a piece of the action. So I illegally took money from people to support my gambling addiction.
What do you make of the fact that New Jersey's first in line for this? That's the state that went to the mat over this, no pun intended. I mean, what do you make of that, given the dire straits of the addiction problem in New Jersey?
Well, what happened was the governor there, Christie, mm-hmm. Pushed for this because the budget didn't have enough money in it. So that's what it started all this stuff about sports betting. But they also started the internet gambling first also. Mm-hmm. And they were the first state to put casinos in after Las Vegas.
Is there any sense, Rob Aller, that I think about in Ohio, whether this if it's legalized, that the action will go to the casinos? Will it go to the racinos or both or in addition and something more?
Yeah, it could expand again. You could have kiosks in Walmart. Right. I mean, I guess I don't know exactly how it has to be regulated, perhaps. But you know, this is, again, we talked earlier about the Wild West, that I don't think it'll be the Wild West right away. But once everybody kind of gravitates to this place, then it could get very dicey. The casinos, I don't think it's just going to be casinos. Again, I think the piece here is the media piece, that it's just the access is going to be so huge. And there's already so much betting illegally on games because it's just right there in front of you. I mean, I don't bet, really gamble, but you know, how am I going to bet on horse races unless I go to a racino or, you know, that type of thing? But I turn on the TV and, you know, there's an NBA game or a baseball game. It's right there. And then there's a button. It's ease of access. This is just, it's very easy. It's going to be, even for the non-gambler, you know, I think I might give it a shot. That's where this is headed, and that's where the money is, and that's why the leagues want it. You're going to see television ratings just take off with this.
Arnie Wexler, did it matter to you, like, let's say if it's legal, then you're having to give identifying information about yourself if you're going online and doing it that way, right? I mean, is that a deterrent in any way?
Not for a compulsive gambler.
Right.
Not at all. You know, you talk about the leagues. The leagues in 1991, they tried to put sports betting into New Jersey, 91, 92. And all the leagues came and testified they don't want it. Now they all want it because they all want to get a piece of the action. They're a bunch of hypocrites.
Why didn't they want a piece of the action back then?
Because they were worried about the integrity and all this nonsense that they wanted to protect their league. Now they're only interested in the money. They all turned around and they now say they want a piece of the action. So that tells you what it's really all about.
And we haven't heard from Ohio State yet. As Rob Aller said, we're still waiting. But these huge Big Ten, these you know, big-time college sports operations have got to be doing what, Rob?
Well, I think they walk that line, maybe. The foot
how to get
on both
a piece
sides,
of the action,
right?
And how to protect the sport.
Ohio State has shown that if there's a dime to be made, they're going to kind of pursue that. This is a little different. This gets into the whole student-athlete thing, really. Is mm-hmm. a student? Is it an athlete? You know, mm-hmm. you use the term at your convenience. I don't know exactly how it'll play out. I know that they are concerned because, you know, an 18-year-old's more impressionable, supposedly, than a 35-year-old, a pro athlete. Are they going to? And they're not making the money. They're not already millionaires.
Right.
So are the gamblers? How is this going to affect it?
could it affect, do we have any sense about how other big time sports universities are responding to this? Michigan, you know, Oklahoma, Texas A&M. What do we know anything? Is anybody responding to this yet?
Well, I think the knee jerk reaction is going to be this is bad. I just think
because that sounds good.
Yeah, because it sounds good. And I think there is concern. I think there is legitimate concern. But when they go into their meetings and talk to the accountant and see that there may be money to be made here, again, it's how the states kind of regulate this. It's like, hey, alcohol sales, right? Everyone was opposed. Well, not everyone, but the colleges were opposed to alcohol sales in stadiums. Now alcohol sales in stadiums, including Ohio State, are there. What changed? Well, they can make money off it. There's money to be made. That's, you know, I don't think alcohol is as dangerous in some ways as it always was. So why did they change? They changed because there was a dollar to be made. It's just it's the way it is.
In 1980, I got a call from Dr. Costa, who was treating a guy who had a gambling addiction, and it happened to be Art Schliester.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys know who he is,
yep.
I'm pretty sure.
Former OSU football star.
Yep. And I've been trying to help Art all these years since 1980. So we're dealing now 37 years, and now he's sitting in jail again.
Mm-hmm. But not for illegal gambling, right? It's for fraud.
Correct.
Right. The things it'll drive people to do. Is there a cure?
There's no cure for compulsive gambling, but there is a place where people can get help. I have a hotline, 888-LAST-BET. I could tell you that there's lots of people in recovery today in America, but people do relapse. I had a friend of mine that was 38 years in recovery, went to the NCAA Final Fours, started to gamble on it, and in the last 5 years, he's lost 3 houses, 2 cars, he's borrowed money from family members, and he's now living in his car. And this is after 38 years of being in recovery.
I would imagine that the likes of Art Schliester can't even go to a game.
Well, you can go to a game if you have your addiction, in the right place. I mean, I go to baseball games, I could tell you that.
Okay, but you're 50 years in recovery.
Well, that really doesn't matter. People do relapse after years and years. There are some people that will never watch a sporting event, that won't go to a sporting event. I could tell you, I went one time to a flea market. We were in New Hampshire on vacation, and we went to a flea market. And it turned out it was at a racetrack, and I had to walk out. I still can't walk near, or when the news comes on and they show the feature race on TV, I shut it off because I can still feel something inside of me.
The racetrack is your Achilles heel.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah. Rob Aller, going forward, you think it's going to be the Ohio General Assembly that acts on this, so that probably, like the caller from Lancaster made the point, so they can control it?
Yes.
Do you think the casinos have been a disappointment in terms of the revenue? Not that they're not bringing it in, but it's just not what was promised at the outset. Do you think that's going to be the same case when it comes to sports gambling?
That's a great question. I think that, again, you can sit in your den, in your man cave, in your wherever it may be, family mm-hmm. room, and watch this. You can go online and do this legally. I think this will be more popular than the casinos. I think there's still a stigma with casinos, really. I mean, for the general gambler who's just mm-hmm. sort of the fringe office pool person. Mm-hmm. Now, will they become addicted to this when you can push a button online legally? I don't know, but it's putting a pork chop in front of a dog, right? I mean, uh-huh. this thing is just sitting there. How do you avoid it when the temptation's there? I think it will be a bigger and bigger and bigger deal as it becomes more kind of mainline.
Rob Aller, I want to thank you for joining us. I really appreciate your time today.
Always.
Rob, I'd love to speak to you.
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
When you get
afterward.
A chance, love to talk to you. I think you got great perspective.
Rob Aller is a Columbus Dispatch sports columnist. We'll have a link to his latest column on the issue of legalized gambling in sports on our website at WOSU.org. Also, Arnie Wexler, certified compulsive gambling counselor, will have a link to his helpline on our website at WOSU.org. Arnie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for letting me come on and talk about this important subject.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.